Good morning, I'm Tommy Howell, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 and San Diego and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. It's one of the core principles of Tree Huggers International to preserve the integrity of parks and wilderness areas. And with the scale and breadth of special wild places in the Golden State in mind, I've often referred to California State Parks as the envy of the nation. Earlier this summer, I raised the concern about the possible closure of 220 of California's 279 state parks, 80%. In order to help balance the state budget and beat back a deficit now totaling tens of billions of dollars. Even though the annual budget for all 279 state park properties is less than 0.1% for the entire general fund, the volume of park closures proposed was on a scale never before seen and included some of the state's most well-known jewels like Humboldt Redwoods, Fort Sutter, Bodie State Historic Park, Calaveras Big Trees State Park, and nearly every state beach along the Orange and San Diego County coastlines, including Borderfield, Torrey Pines, Carlsbad, Doheny, and others. Even the massive Anza Borrego Desert State Park in San Diego County, the largest state park in the system, was earmarked for closure, along with Torrey Pines State Reserve, Palomar Mountain State Park, Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, and sadly, all of these parks remain on a chopping block. Despite a tenuous budget agreement between the governor and the legislature, in late July, Governor Schwarzenegger cut an additional $6.2 million from state parks funding when he signed the negotiated state budget. These further cuts will force the closure of an additional 50 parks for a total of 100, which may be shut for lack of money this year. Not as bad as 220 out of 279, but still not good. And since this crisis got underway, a great deal of evidence has been made available about the amount of money active, functioning state parks put back in the coffers of their communities. Figures I've seen put the amount at over $2 for every $1 spent by taxpayers on state parks. In addition, the cost of closing these state parks and then someday reopening them, if they're ever reopened again, will be severe. In terms of the lack of regular maintenance and oversight, the lack of law enforcement, and the lack of the ability to enforce park rules, damage from vandalism, resource degradation, even poaching. State parks are not meant to be profit-making machines and cash registers. They are meant to act as respite for the taxpayers of this state, places for solace, recreation, and places where generations of Californians have come to recharge and learn about their state's history. They were set aside, often with the help of foundations and concerned citizens who entrusted the state to oversee the original character of these parks. Joining us today to talk all about California State Parks is a return guest of the show, Sarah Feldman. She's the Vice President for Programs with the California State Parks Foundation. She came all the way down from Los Angeles to be with us here today. Sarah, very good to see you. Welcome back to Tree Huggers International.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a relief to get out of the firestorm of L.A. and breathe a little fresh air. So I benefited just from the drive down.
Good. Well, let me ask you this. Let's start here. Are there any associations or conservation groups that are looking to take over potentially the day-to-day operations of some of these parks that are due to be closed?
Absolutely. We're working very closely with the Parks Department and with many partners, potential and actual. We have a very good relationship with CALPA, which is the umbrella group of all the individual friend associations. In Park Talk, they're called cooperating associations. And those are groups of volunteers, people who are dedicated to a particular park. For instance, here in the San Diego area, there's a great cooperating association for Torrey Pines. There's another one for San Diego Old Town, and there's many others. These are people who just dedicate their time to the park, doing volunteer activities, perhaps running a shop. At Anza Borrego, there's a great volunteer group and the Anza Borrego Foundation. I think the really important thing, Tommy, to note is we will have some success here. There are a lot of corporations and other nonprofits, concessionaires, cooperating associations. We will have some success. Some parks will be kept at least partially open. Some will be kept open altogether by donations, but some will close. An appreciable number will close. Whatever the support is, it will never substitute for public support. It's a short-term reaction to a crisis. Critical, appreciated, really speaks to the issue you raised about reopening parks. Because if they're given attention in this interim period, they won't get so run down that it'll cost a fortune to reopen them. So that kind of help is critical and appreciated, but there needs to be a long-term solution so that parks are never in this situation again.
Talk to me about the California State Parks Foundation's take on the economic benefits of leaving these parks open instead of closing them.
We are convinced, as are academics who have studied this, in particular, recently Sacramento State released a study that very much backed up with firm scientific evidence. California State Parks generate far more income than they cost. For instance, they found that visitors spent approximately $57.63 per visit, resulting in total statewide expenditures of $4.32 billion. Because there's over 80 million visitors or visits to state parks every year. They provide a great economic benefit for the state. You are exactly right. The estimate is that for every dollar spent on state parks, they generate approximately $2.35 back into the general fund in revenue generated, not necessarily through people who are just going into the park and paying a fee, but those people go to restaurants, they go stay at bed and breakfasts and hotels. They buy things in the towns surrounding the park. In some towns in California are almost totally dependent on the revenue that's generated by all the visitors to the park in their area. So some places that are near towns like the Bodie Ghost Town, for instance, or near Hearst Castle, those towns are very dependent on the visitorship to those parks. But there's an effect that will spread throughout California. If you close parks, this money goes away. People are not visiting. People are not spending. And there is an economic impact to that closure.
You know, Sarah, one of the things that really concerns me the most about state parks being closed, wherever in the state they may be, is the threat of a resource degradation, which is a very fancy way of saying I'm concerned about the natural elements of the park. Partially the reason these parks were set aside in the first place were to preserve these habitats and landscapes. I'm concerned about those being destroyed or so significantly damaged to the point where it undoes the whole reason of having a state park there in the first place. You know, it's bad enough if you're leaving infrastructure like a visitor center, restrooms, or roads just to what's going to happen to them without regular maintenance. But when you close a state park, you are also getting rid of that constant supervision that rangers provide, that law enforcement provides. And frankly, California state parks are able to provide law enforcement in a very cost-effective way and in a way that maintains the law of the land within the border of those state parks, but also ensures that those park ethics are abided by. I mean, you take a place like Anza Borrego Desert State Park that is simply enormous beyond description. And the staff that that park has already can't keep eyes on every part of it at all times. So if you have no law enforcement apparatus functioning there on a regular basis, what are you going to do? You can't put a fence around that. That's completely unreasonable. So the law enforcement component of California state parks preserving why those parks were set aside, that's something that I don't think is really being talked about much here.
You know, in Anza Borrego, another thing that the staff does that doesn't get a huge amount of press, but they routinely do it, they do a couple hundred of rescues every year. People get lost, people run out of water, their cars break down, and Anza Borrego has a helicopter to go visit people, and they have rangers who know every inch of that park, and they do a lot of rescues. And as you point out, they take care of natural resources, and there's really not a park in California that doesn't have the attention of state park personnel vis-a-vis the natural resources there, be it water quality, non-native, what we call exotic species of plants that can come in and just completely take over acres and acres of land and, you know, drive out the native habitation. So it becomes what's called a monoculture, where it's just one plant. There are ecologists on staff, maintenance workers who are trained to weed out non-native plants, etc. There's people who deal with tree diseases. All of that will be lost in the parks that are closed. Those parks, you're right, you can't put up a gate around all of them, but there will no longer be that kind of attention. The results could be catastrophic in some cases, or just really, really bad. A lot depends on some other activities that may start happening in some of those parks, illegal, illicit, meth labs, marijuana farms. I mean, if there are no rangers and no supervision, we do have a quite high level of concern over that.
And your colleague Tracy Verardo-Torres said on this show as well that state parks were never designed to be closed. State parks were never designed to be locked up. They were designed to be open. They were designed to be inviting. They were designed to let the public in.
Of course, that's exactly right. For instance, Topanga Canyon State Park in Los Angeles, there's something like 143 trailheads. What will happen is by closing, there may be somebody from the Parks Department who comes around, you know, once a month to just take a look. But the utilities will be turned off, the bathrooms won't work, the parking lots will be gated, the park will just be in a totally unattended to state.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Topanga State Park because that's in the Santa Monica Mountains. It's right next to L.A. In fact, it's just northwest of Los Angeles. And you go up on those trails like the Backbone Trail and you have no idea you are in the second largest city in the United States. It's just such a removal from that urban environment. Of course, it's up there with Will Rogers State Historic Park, and it's checkerboarded with areas of the Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area. And it's just a great example of California State Parks working together with the National Park Service. But do you think there is a possibility if Topanga or Will Rogers, I think Will Rogers may likely be closed, do you think there's a possibility that the feds might be able to take over running perhaps day-to-day operations at those affected state parks in that area of the Santa Monica Mountains?
I'm not personally aware of an arrangement having been solidified, but there are discussions. And those discussions are taking place all over the state. The federal government, the National Park Service, is one of the partners that the Department of Parks and Recreation is talking to about taking over parks temporarily. It's a fairly small number, but every little bit helps.
Do you think the National Park Service would be able to do the same thing up along the North Coast with some of the Redwood parks?
Yeah, I think there are discussions going on throughout the state.
And then with Will Rogers State Park, that's a really good example of parks that have an educational component. Not only that, too, I mean, the state spent a lot of money refurbishing the home of Will Rogers and really made it this great centerpiece of the park. Another great example of that is La Prisma Mission by Lompoc, or even Sutter's Mill up in Sacramento. I mean, these are places which, A, the state spent a lot of money to get up into shape and really get them to be as competitive resource-wise with other state parks, and B, they have a very significant educational component to them as well.
California State Parks are the second largest educator in the state after the public school system. Many, many, many thousands of school kids come to parks all over California, in particular, as you mentioned, the historic parks. They learn about California history. Unfortunately, those parks are among the more likely to be closed because they have low revenue generating visitation. They have very high visitation when you count the kids, but California law provides that school children cannot be charged for going to state parks. So all those thousands and thousands of kids go to state parks for free, which in our opinion is as it should be, but that only works if there is the public support for keeping the parks open. So many of those parks are going to close and not be able to have the kind of public school visitorship that has existed in the past. There's really a lot of them that are very beautiful, special places, and I think particularly vulnerable to these kinds of closure issues because they are very old structures. They need constant upkeep and maintenance. And as I'm sure your listeners are aware, when you let things go with houses, they don't get better, they get worse. And, you know, we are very concerned about the integrity of those historic and cultural monuments that are part of California history. They cannot be replaced.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. My name is Tommy Howe, and joining us today is Sarah Feldman from the California State Parks Foundation. She's the Vice President for Programs. She's joining us. She came down from Los Angeles to be with us here today. And we're talking about the likely closure of 100 state parks in the California State Park System. Earlier this year, it looked like 220 out of 279 were going to be closed. For more information, go to calparks.org. That's www.calparks.org, calparks.org. I think one of the things that was left out of the conversation and the discussion about state parks, especially this spring, is that these parks are already functioning on a shoestring. It's not as though this was a big spending entity beforehand.
That's absolutely right, Tommy. I mean, state parks has been cut over the years to the bone. The general fund support prior to the 1980s was almost entirely funded by the general fund. It's now about 50% general fund or a little more, and the other part of core funding are the user fees. But that pays for less than half of the actual cost of running the parks. And that general fund allocation has been reduced and reduced and reduced every year. State parks has had to do with less. And all sorts of projects, those historical cultural buildings, keeping up water quality, building new, better bathrooms, and every kind of maintenance project you can imagine within a park has climbed to well over $1 billion. So there's a huge backlog of projects. Some of them get done through bond funding, but that doesn't even come close to completely funding the need.
And it's disappointing, too, because we're at a point now where the federal government is reinvesting in a lot of their national parks and beefing up the infrastructure there. So it's disappointing to see California not being able to do that or choosing not to do that. Also, state parks are a source of cost-effective recreation for Californians, which is part of the reason they were there in the first place.
Even putting aside economic benefits, there's an issue of equity within this state related to state parks, which is state parks are pretty much the last low-cost option for people who cannot afford expensive vacations. And I think, as we all know, it's tough times. And state parks provide an opportunity to be on a beach at sunset, to hike in the mountains, and smell the fresh air and the pine trees, to understand the history of our state in a very visceral way, to just relax, find solace, quiet, for families to take their children and really enjoy some time away. And that's always what parks have been about. And so the closure of these state parks is going to take that pretty much last remaining opportunity away from people who have nowhere else to go. They cannot afford to go stay at Shutter's Hotel on the Santa Monica Beach.
You know, prior to this current round of park closures, which is just disappointing to speak about it this way, but prior to all this happening, California State Parks Foundation had been a component in the success of a couple of park victories here in Southern California. I mean, there was Trestles at San Onofre State Beach and the threat of the Foothill South Toll Road going through the San Onofre Backcountry. as well as with the Sunrise Power Link, which is now not going to be going through Anza Borrego Desert State Park, which is an amazing wilderness area, as we know. Are there some other projects that the California State Parks Foundation has been working on that just hasn't been getting the kind of press it might have ordinarily because of all these park closures going on?
Oh, sure. I mean, those were two major, major things which had very positive outcomes overall. We have a significant number of other threats to state parks that we are currently working on. We're not probably talking about them as much because we're talking about this, but they haven't gone away and we haven't forgotten about them. Myself, I'm particularly concerned with a project at Chino Hills, which is in the Inland Empire, sort of on the border between Orange County and the Inland Empire. There's a very large transmission line project called the Tehachapi Project that's running for, gosh, well over 100 miles to supply electricity. It's a wind project for LA. And there's a very small area of the city of Chino Hills where the line is scheduled to run through an existing right-of-way that is near houses. And the people who live in that area really don't want that line there and are trying to push it into the park. So this is an issue that we've been involved with and working on. There should be a decision pretty soon. I'm thinking maybe October from the CPUC. And that's one example of the kind of work that we do. We continue to identify and monitor threats and take action when a threat is significant enough to really have a big impact on a park.
Is that the most common kind of threat you see towards parks, though, is power lines or a road?
Yes, infrastructure. I mean, California's population is growing enormously, and there's no question that, but that infrastructure, increased infrastructure, is going to be a need in the future as we move forward. But without necessarily getting into the whole philosophy and policy issues related to energy issues, because that's beyond the scope of what we do, I think it is safe to say that there are smart ways to meet those infrastructure needs that do not require the destruction of state parks. And we have protected and will continue to protect state parks against that sort of thing. We're also concerned with a road through Richardson Grove in Northern California. That's another case where we're paying particularly close attention.
Bodie State Historical Park is located in Gold Country. It's not really near a major population center.
Way north.
And while there are really high-profile state parks, which were actually on the chopping block with the last consideration when they were looking at 80%, I mean, Montaña de Oro, Anza Borrego, you take a park like Bodie, which isn't that big, which has more of a historical context than like an outdoor recreation context. Can you frame as to why this should be an issue that Californians really need to be thinking about?
Bodie is a really good example, and there are many more examples like that. Those parks, as we've already discussed, serve to educate our children. They bring tourists into the state. They generate economic benefit. They are important to the history and the preservation of natural resources that are what make California the beautiful place and the unique place that it is. California is not just a state that has a few nice places. It's got an unbelievable coast, gorgeous mountains, incredible historical and cultural resources. Many of those are state parks. If those go away, that actually impacts every citizen of California, both in terms of the dollar in their pocket, you know, the lost revenue to the general fund, the cost of bringing it back up, in terms of their experience of being able to visit any park they want and camp or hike, the education of their children. It just has multiple impacts throughout the whole state because it's all part of a system that ties together and provides enormous benefit to the state and the citizens of the state in so many different ways.
A solution was proposed for the dilemma facing California state parks, and that involved license renewal fees.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
I will say that the State Parks Foundation is looking very hard at long-term solutions that will provide a stable funding source for state parks. The proposal that was in the legislature relates to a fee on license renewals. The State Parks Foundation, along with all the other efforts that we're making to work with corporate and nonprofit partners, is also looking at that and other solutions.
Is it possible the state may eventually try and sell these off? Because I would hate to see Montaña de Oro lost.
I'm not a representative of the Department of Parks and Recreation, but I think I can safely say that's certainly not their intent. They intend to reopen these parks. They are looking at a one to two year timeline. It's not their intent to sell parks at the present time. I mean, I don't think any of us really know what the future holds, but that's not the plan.
The parks that may wind up being closed, is there any idea on the part of the foundation as to when that might happen?
Our understanding is that it's going to be kind of a staggered closure. The list will come out. Some may close immediately. Some may close over the next few months because they still have camping reservations and such to be honored, and personnel needs to be shifted around. So I think it's supposed to happen kind of between now and January. Some may be a little longer, some may be a little less, but that's my understanding of the plan. Some may close on a partial basis, like they'll close during the week but be open on the weekend. Some may close seasonally and just, for instance, be open during the summer. So when the list comes out, we'll have a much clearer picture of how that's all going to work. I think it's important for people to know that all the efforts that we're making depend entirely on them. And there is a lot that they can do. For one, they can go to our website, which is calparks.org. That is a portal to a lot of different information about parks, including lots of advocacy activities if people want to get involved. Also, a lot of people have expressed interest in recent months in volunteering in state parks to help take up the slack, particularly in closed parks or even parks that are open but have significantly less staff than they used to have. We are working very hard on creating some really innovative programs that will help people to do that. They're not quite up and running yet, but we're working on them. They will be on the website when they are, and we're planning on a program that will really help parks and will really allow people the opportunity to help out by volunteering in a number of different ways. I would really urge people to stay in touch through our website. Keep their eye on what they can do. You'll have a range of opportunities because it really makes a difference. I think without the activism of all of our partners and all of the people in California who push so hard on the governor and on the legislature, frankly, it's a little hard to imagine, but it would actually be a lot worse. So it has really made a difference. And as we move forward, we'll definitely continue to do so.
Where do you enjoy going in the California State Park System?
I'm going to say two parks. They're very different. They're both in LA because that's where I live. One is Malibu Creek State Park. That's where, for a lot of listeners will know it, that's where MASH was filmed. I love that park. It's so beautiful. And there's this great, it's called the Fossil Pool, where you can hike out to. It's a beautiful pool with rocks around it, and it's such iconic California imagery with the oak trees and the paths. I love that park. And then the other one I'm going to say is, two parks that are linked in LA, Rio de Los Angeles State Park and Los Angeles State Historic Park. One, Rio used to be known as Taylor Yards, and LA State Historic Park as the Cornfield. These are two really cutting-edge urban parks. Rio has a restored wetland that the foundation raised a very significant sum of money to help restore, and actually we have a continuing project there focusing on restoration with native plants, native to the LA River area. And LA State Historic Park is a really iconic park just north of downtown with unbelievable views of the downtown skyline to one side and one of LA's beautiful bridges and the mountains to the other side, and has the potential to grow into something that will rival Millennium Park or Central Park in Chicago and New York, respectively. That's something I've spent an enormous amount of time working on, a design competition, and we really care a lot about that park. So those are my two favorites. There's plenty others that I love and go to, as I know there are in San Diego and all over the state. So for your listeners who care, there are ways to help. Go to that website, calparks.org, and lend your voice to the cause.
Sarah, very, very nice seeing you again. I'm so glad you could come back on the program and make the drive down from Los Angeles. So thank you for coming down here.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all you do. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sarah. Stay in touch, and we'll see you next time.
Okay.
That's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Howe, and once again, many thanks to Sarah Feldman, the Vice President for Programs with the California State Parks Foundation. 100 California state parks are soon to be closed. When that list comes out, we'll get that list up at the Tree Huggers International page at fm949sd.com. California State Parks Foundation, they'll obviously have that list on their website as well. That's www.calparks.org. Calparks, C-A-L, parks.org. There's a lot of great information on that website, a lot of good information about volunteer work as well you can do with California State Parks. Hopefully, a lot of these parks that are due to be closed can be managed by other entities. Again, more information at calparks.org. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media, and as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, we'd love to hear from you. Go ahead and email me at tommy@fm949sd.com. That's tommy@fm949sd.com. For more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, you can go to the Tree Huggers International page at the FM949 website. That's www.fm949sd.com/treehuggers. Tree Huggers International will also be resuming operation at treehuggersintl.com. That's treehuggersintl.com. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. We'll be back again next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs in our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation next on FM 94.9. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.